Hello, it is time to read from the Sioux City Journal for today, Saturday, September 24th, 2022. My name is John Reef, and I'll be bringing you the news today. Here's a look at what we'll be reading. We'll start with the weather, then do the mini editorial, then the front page stories, moving to the inside pages for more stories of local and local interest. And then at the 30-minute mark, we'll do the obituaries, followed by sports and feature stories as time allows, wrapping up with Dear Abby and then the weather once more. Partly sunny, breezy, and warmer today, a high of 79 degrees and winds out of the west-northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Turning clear skies tonight, low down to 51. Northwest winds 7 to 14 miles per hour. Mostly sunny, breezy, and pleasant on Sunday, a high tomorrow 74, winds northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Sunday night, mostly clear skies, low 41. Partly sunny and pleasant on Monday, high up to 74 degrees again, and winds northwest at 8 to 16. 41 for the low on Monday night under clear skies and mostly sunny and pleasant on Tuesday. High 71, and winds north at 6 to 12 miles per hour. Tuesday night's low of 41 again under mostly clear skies, and clear skies Wednesday, lots of sun. High of 72 degrees, winds south-southeast at 8 to 16 miles an hour. All in all, pretty nice weather we've got coming our way. Looking at the mini editorial for today, it's by William Stewart of Sioux City. That's S-T-E-W-A-R-T. William Stewart writes as follows. Kudos to Governors Abbott and DeSantis for having the insight to bring the southwestern border issues to the doorsteps of both our president and vice president, both of whom simply refuse to visit the border to assess the horrific situation for themselves. Mr. Biden accuses both governors of using immigrant children as pawns in a despicable game while he has sanctioned nighttime sorties to deliver immigrants in the cover of darkness to various states. How do you spell hypocrite? That is from William Stewart of Sioux City. Top story on the front page, Dow hits 2022 low. Stocks fell sharply worldwide Friday on worries an already slowing global economy could fall into recession as central banks raise the pressure with additional interest rate hikes. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 1.6%, closing at its lowest level since late 2020. The S&P 500 fell 1.7%, close to its 2022 low set in mid-June, while the NASDAQ slid 1.8%. The selling capped another rough week on Wall Street, leaving the major indexes with their fifth weekly loss in 6 weeks. European stocks fell just as sharply or more after preliminary data there suggested business activity had its worst monthly contraction since the start of 2021. Adding to the pressure was a new plan announced in London to cut taxes, which sent UK yields soaring because it could force its central bank to raise rates even more sharply. The Federal Reserve and other central banks around the world aggressively hiked interest rates this week in hopes of undercutting high inflation with more big increases promised for the future. Such moves put the brakes on economies by design in hopes that slower purchases by households and businesses will deflate inflationary pressures, but they also threaten a recession if they rise too far or too quickly. Besides Friday's discouraging data on European business activity, a separate report suggested U.S. activity is also still shrinking, though not quite as badly as in earlier months. Quoting here, financial markets are now fully absorbing the Fed's harsh message that there will be no retreat from the inflation fight, end quote. Douglas Porter, chief economist at BMO Capital Markets, wrote in a research report. U.S. crude oil prices slid 5.7% to their lowest levels since early this year on worries that a weaker global economy will burn less fuel. Cryptocurrency prices also fell sharply because higher interest rates tend to hit hardest at the investments that look the priciest or the most risky. Even gold fell in the worldwide rout as bonds paying higher yields made investments that pay no interest look less attractive. Meanwhile, the U.S. dollar has been moving sharply higher against other currencies. That can hurt profits for U.S. companies, with lots of overseas businesses, as well as put a financial squeeze on much of the developing world. The S&P 500 fell 64.76 points to 3,693.23, its fourth straight drop. The Dow, which at one point was down more than 800 points, lost 486.27 points to close at 29,590.41. The NASDAQ fell 198.88 points to 10,867.93. Smaller company stocks did even worse. The Russell 2000 fell 42.72 points or 2.5% to close at 1679.59. More than 85% of stocks in the S&P 500 closed in the red, with technology companies, retailers, and banks among the biggest weights on the benchmark index. The Federal Reserve on Wednesday lifted its benchmark rate, which affects many consumer and business loans, to a range of 3% to 3.25%. It was at virtually zero at the start of the year. The Fed also released a forecast suggesting its benchmark rate could be 4.4% by the year's end, a full point higher than envisioned in June. Treasury yields have climbed to multi-year highs as interest rates rise. The yield on the two-year Treasury, which tends to follow expectations for Federal Reserve action, rose to 4.20% from 4.12% late Thursday. It is trading at its highest level since 2007. The yield on the 10-year Treasury, which influences mortgage rates, slipped to 3.69% from 3.71%. Goldman Sachs strategists say a majority of their clients now see a, quote, hard landing, end quote, that pulls the economy sharply lower as inevitable. The question for them is just on the timing, magnitude, and length of a potential recession. Higher interest rates hurt all kinds of investments, but stocks could stay steady as long as corporate profits grow strongly. The problem is that many analysts are beginning to cut their forecasts for upcoming earnings because of higher rates and worries about a possible recession. Quote, increasingly, market psychology has transitioned from concerns over inflation to worries that, at a minimum, corporate profits will decline as economic growth slows demand, end quote, said Quincy Crosby, chief global strategist for LPL Financial. In the U.S., the jobs market has remained remarkably solid, and many analysts think the economy grew in the summer quarter after shrinking in the first 6 months of the year. But the encouraging signs also suggest the Fed may have to jack rates even higher to get the cooling needed to bring down inflation. Some key areas of the economy are already weakening. Mortgage rates have reached 14-year highs, causing sales of existing homes to drop 20% in the past year. In Europe, meanwhile, the already fragile economy is dealing with the effects of war on its eastern front following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The European Central Bank is hiking its key interest rate to combat inflation, even as the region's economy is already expected to plunge into a recession. And in Asia, China's economy is contending with still strict measures meant to limit COVID infections that also hurt businesses. In an inset picture on page A4, it shows American flags flying Friday outside the New York Stock Exchange in New York. Going to the next story on the front page, Rogers sentenced to 15 years in prison. This is by Nick Heitrek in Dateline Lincoln, Nebraska. Former South Sioux City High School assistant football coach Nathan Rogers was sentenced Friday to 15 years in federal prison for taking photos and videos of himself having sex with a student. Rogers, 27, had pleaded guilty in June in U.S. District Court in Lincoln to one count of production of child pornography. There is no parole in the federal system, and Rogers will serve 5 years on supervised release after completing his prison sentence. He still faces sentencing for sexual assault in Dakota County. while investigating a sexual abuse complaint involving Rogers and a 15-year-old girl, authorities discovered the videos and photos of Rogers with the second girl when searching the contents of Rogers' cell phone. The two also had sent each other nude photos of themselves on their phones. Rogers was charged with taking video of sexual activity and receiving pornographic images from October 11, 2020 through February 20, 2021. As part of a plea agreement, a charge of receiving child pornography was dismissed. In August, Rogers pleaded no contest to two counts of first-degree sexual assault in Dakota County District Court and is scheduled to be sentenced on October 4th. He faces up to 50 years in prison on each charge. A plea agreement says prosecutors will recommend that his prison sentence on those charges be served concurrently or at the same time as his federal prison sentence. Rogers was charged with assaulting the 15-year-old girl at his home in December 2020. Rogers told investigators the sex was consensual. Rogers had sex with the second high school student who is the subject of the federal case numerous times when she was 15 and after she had turned 16. Rogers was fired from his job as an assistant football coach at South Sioux City on March 3, 2021, after the first girl reported the alleged assault to a school employee. He was arrested later that month. And the last story from the front page, it's titled Lessons for Life from the Field. Navy SEAL tells Heland students to persevere when others doubt them. This is by Caitlin Yamada and Dateline Sioux City. Boyd Renner encouraged Bishop Heland High School students Friday to persevere whenever someone doubts their ability to succeed. The decorated Navy SEAL spoke from experience. Renner said he grew up poor in Colorado. One of his best friends in high school joined the Navy and convinced him to consider doing likewise. Renner then drove 60 miles to the nearest recruiting center. While waiting to speak to a recruiter, he saw a magazine about the Navy SEALs and thought to himself, this is kind of what I think I want to do, he said. When he told the recruiter he wanted to be a SEAL, he heard the word no. I'm sitting across from the first Navy guy I've ever met in my life with my dream in my hand, and he says no, Renner told the Heland students at an all-school assembly. Renner said the path of his life could have gone completely different if he had let that recruiter change his mind. Instead, he signed up for any job that was available, which was aviation electrician. He still wanted to be a SEAL, but needed to find a way to do it. School for aviation electrician is 6 months long. After starting the school, he met a SEAL recruiter who told him, if you work out with me for the next 6 months of this school, you stay away from the bars, you study, you graduate first from your class as an aviation electrician, I will get your orders changed, Renner recalled. Renner graduated first in his class and started SEAL training. He shared a few stories with the students from his time in SEAL training, and each emphasized when he was underestimated. There were 120 students in his SEAL class, and just 16 graduated. He said the recruiter who said no drove Renner to work harder, and he made it his mission to prove anyone wrong who underestimated him. Renner served more than 23 years with the Naval Special Warfare Development Group before retiring. After the September 11th terrorist attacks, he completed 10 tours in Afghanistan and 2 tours in Iraq. He was decorated multiple times for his valor in combat, being awarded the Navy and Marine Corps Life-Saving Medal, the Bronze Star Medal, the Defense Meritorious Service Medal, the Joint Service Commendation Medal, and the Navy and Marine Corps Commendation Medal, and the Army Commendation Medal. As a member of the military, Renner said he never had to worry about paychecks, insurance, and didn't pay for the undergraduate degree and half the master's degree he completed while in the Navy. It worked out really, really well for me, he told the students. Renner was also the keynote speaker for the Rotary District 5610 conference on Friday night in Sioux City. While meeting with the Heland students earlier in the day, Renner answered various questions ranging from what sports he played in high school to his experiences as a SEAL. Renner said he wanted to thank the recruiter who told him no and even rehearsed a speech, but he died before he could do so. Don't let anyone underestimate you. Don't ever underestimate the person next to you and never, ever underestimate your opponent, he said. Renner said he likes to tell students his story as a way to serve as a mentor. He said he had to learn the hard way and didn't have a mentor to guide him along the way. I pride myself in being able to send a message, a vague macro message that might resonate with one or two people, he said. And it's that picture on page A4. It shows retired Navy SEAL Boyd Renner speaking about overcoming adversity as he addresses Bishop Helan High School students in Sioux City Friday. On the front page, in a big color photo, it shows Navy SEAL Boyd Renner answering questions from Bishop Helan High School students after sharing his story at an all-school assembly Friday afternoon. Renner was also the keynote speaker at the Rotary District 5610 conference Friday night. Moving now to page A2. Man gets 10 years prison for chloroform kidnapping. This by Nick Heitrek in Dateline Sioux City. A Bronson, Iowa man who used homemade chloroform to abduct his ex-girlfriend was sentenced Friday to more than 10 years in federal prison. Zach Smith, 22 years old, pleaded guilty in March in U.S. District Court in Sioux City to one count of kidnapping. As part of a plea agreement, he has agreed to a 121-month prison sentence. There is no parole in the federal system, and Smith must serve 3 years on supervised release upon completion of his prison sentence. As part of his plea agreement, prosecutors dropped a charge of interstate violation of a protection order, and Smith agreed to give up his right to appeal his conviction and sentence. Smith hid for 3 hours in the South Sioux City woman's vehicle on June 3, 2021. When she got in, and after she had dropped a friend off at school, Smith threatened her with an airsoft pistol and forced her into his vehicle, where he blindfolded her, bound her with zip ties and duct tape, and rendered her unconscious with homemade chloroform. The victim told investigators she awakened alone in a shed at Smith's home in rural Bronson and was able to remove rope and duct tape from her ankles and escape. She was found at a rural Woodbury County intersection by a family member who was looking for her. Investigators later found Smith in possession of a backpack containing condoms, lubrication, ropes, ties, and duct tape. Smith told investigators he had used items in the backpack during the abduction and had been planning the kidnapping for more than 2 weeks. He said he planned to keep the woman for a week but did not know what he would do with her after that. A judge issued a no-contact order against Smith a month earlier after he was arrested and charged in Woodbury County with two misdemeanor counts of false imprisonment for an incident in which he posed as his father and sent emails to the ex-girlfriend telling her that Smith had committed suicide and asking her to come to his home to pick up her belongings. The ex-girlfriend and a friend went to the home, where Smith, armed with a BB gun, was waiting. He locked the door and would not let them leave. Police later rescued the women. Smith pleaded guilty to the false imprisonment charges and was sentenced to 75 days in jail. He was initially charged in Woodbury County District Court in the kidnapping case, but those charges were dismissed after he was indicted in federal court. Next story on page A2. First Nebraska casino gets green light. Lincoln Casino, owned by Ho-Chunk Related Group, to open Saturday. This is by Matt Olberding of the Lincoln Journal-Star. The long-awaited opening of Nebraska's first state-licensed casino cleared its final hurdle Friday afternoon, paving the way for the first pull of a slot machine in Lincoln's history. The Nebraska Racing and Gaming Commission voted Friday to grant a permanent gaming license to War Horse Lincoln, which plans to open its temporary casino at the Lincoln Racecourse on Saturday. The commission's unanimous approval met with a burst of applause and cheers from a crowd of attendees at the Nebraska East Union, where the commission meets, comes nearly 2 years after Nebraska voters overwhelmingly supported a ballot initiative to allow casino gambling at the state's horse tracks. It is historic by definition, Commissioner Tony Fulton told reporters after Friday's meeting. It has never happened before. Warhorse Lincoln will welcome gamblers to its temporary casino at the Lincoln Racecourse near U.S. 77 and West Denton Road at 10 a.m. Saturday, said Lance Morgan, the president and CEO of Ho-Chunk Inc., the economic wing of the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska and operator of Warhorse. "We've worked on it for years," Morgan said after the meeting, "and to see it come to fruition is almost surreal, like I'm having trouble believing it. But I know tomorrow we'll open up and things will get going." Warhorse also plans to open casinos in Omaha and South Sioux City. The commission had been set to vote on Warhorse Lincoln's permanent license in a Zoom meeting last week, but the body canceled the meeting over concerns among some commissioners about making the decision to grant the state's first permanent casino license in a virtual setting. "It was an easy concern to address," Commission Chairman Dennis Lee said then. "We just moved it to 10 days. The commission had briefly considered granting the permanent license in its August 31 meeting, but decided to hold off because Warhorse still had to test its slot machines and commission officials had not completed background checks at all of the key officials involved with the casino. The delay turned out to be necessary, according to Tom Sage, the commission's executive director, who told the board Friday that Warhorse encountered a, quote, sensitive security issue, end quote, this week that wasn't fully resolved until Friday morning. After the meeting, Morgan said the issue involved a, quote, security door, end quote. The security hang-up and a 25-minute delayed start to Friday's meeting due to a tardy commissioner marked the final delays in a 2-year gap between the success of the ballot initiative and Saturday's opening. The 24-month holdup has left millions in potential tax revenue on the table, a fact that's not lost on supporters and even some opponents. State Senator Tom Breese, who is a longtime opponent of expanded gambling in Nebraska, but also a staunch supporter of property tax relief, sent a letter to the Racing and Gaming Commission earlier this month reminding members of their duty to enact the will of the voters and to do so as soon as possible. Breese, who's from Albion, wrote that his office has been getting calls from constituents, quote, who have expressed the belief that the government is dragging its feet with regard to allowing the casinos to open, end quote. In response to those criticisms Friday, commissioners described the 2-year process as the genesis of casino gambling in Nebraska and pointed to the importance of ensuring things were done right and that consumers in the state were thoroughly protected. Quote, "This really was a warp speed project," end quote, Commissioner Shane Greckel said, noting that Warhorse's casino application alone amounted to thousands of pages of documents that had to be reviewed and approved. And Lee, the commission's chairman, pointed to the small number of state employees who were tasked with morphing the ballot initiative into a functioning gaming system or ecosystem. "When the initiative passed, the commission had 2 full-time staff," he said, drawing comparison to the Wheat Board and a small number of staff members. Lee said the commission staff has grown to 10 since the November 2020 vote. Quote, "And since that time, we've adopted extensive rules and regulations. We've had public hearings on those rules and regulations," end quote, Lee said. "Now, the delay is over." It shows a picture inset on page A2 of Warhorse Lincoln, Nebraska's first casino, which will open to the public today. Continuing on page A2 with some briefs, police questioned student about possible threat, this Dateline Sioux City. West High School and 2 other Sioux City schools were placed in lockout status briefly Friday after authorities were notified of a potentially threatening social media post. West High School students notified school administrators and police of the post, which showed ammunition and a message that, quote, seemed like a veiled threat, end quote, Sioux City Police Spokesman Sergeant Jeremy McClure said. Sioux City Community School District Director of Communications Leslie Haying said West High was placed on lockout in which no one is allowed to enter or exit the building, at approximately 8:30 a.m. while police investigated the threat. West Middle School and Los Hills Elementary School were added at 8:24 a.m. The lockout at all three schools was lifted at 9:07 a.m. Haying said the lockout caused no disruptions to the school schedules and classes continued uninterrupted. McClure said police identified the juvenile male student who had made the social media post and questioned him. The post was not a direct threat, McClure said, and police referred the case to the Woodbury County Attorney's Office to review for possible charges. Next story, Calumet man pleads guilty of shooting at wife, this Dateline Primgar. A Calumet, Iowa man has pleaded guilty of shooting at his wife during a domestic disturbance. Paul Long, 41, entered written guilty pleas Wednesday in O'Brien County District Court to single counts of intimidation with a dangerous weapon and willful injury resulting in bodily injury. The charges were amended as part of a plea agreement from attempted murder and domestic abuse assault. He has agreed to a 15-year prison sentence and two other counts of domestic abuse assault will be dismissed. Sentencing is scheduled for November 14th. Long struck his wife in the head with the butt of a 12-gauge shotgun, then fired a shot at her as she ran from the house in the 200 block of South Morse Avenue in Calumet during the February 13th incident. Long was involved with a short standoff with authorities who responded to the incident. The standoff ended when Long exited the home and was taken into custody. According to court documents, in addition to striking his wife with the gun, Long also choked her three times with his hands during the alleged assault. Next story, water main break shutters SBL schools. This Dateline Sergeant Bluff. Sergeant Bluff Luton Community Schools canceled classes Friday after a water main break. Superintendent Chad Jansen wrote in a social media post that the water main break required shutting off the water at entire buildings. According to the district's website, Little Steps Daycare and Gateway to College were also closed Friday. Staff were allowed to work from home. Next story, man sentenced to federal prison on gun charge. A Sioux City man has been sentenced to more than 3 years in federal prison for illegal possession of a firearm. David Thompson, 46, pleaded guilty in April in U.S. District Court in Sioux City to one count of being a prohibited person in possession of a firearm. He was sentenced Thursday to 42 months in prison and must serve 3 years on supervised release after completing his sentence. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Thompson, who has previous felony convictions that now prohibit him from legally possessing a gun, fired 11 shots into the air with a pistol outside a home during an argument on December 31st. Also on page A2, it shows an inset picture of Mike Pompeo, former U.S. Secretary of State and former director of the CIA, as he was speaking at a news conference on Thursday, September 22nd at the Sioux City Convention Center. Pompeo was speaking with media in advance of delivering the keynote speech at that evening's Siouxland Chamber of Commerce dinner. Finally, on page A2, it's a little update for you on Iowa Politics Podcast. And on this week's edition of the On Iowa Politics Podcast, allegations of unwanted advances by Mike Franken are unearthed. The White House gets a little passive-aggressive with Governor Kim Reynolds over pandemic relief funding and Mike Pompeo's latest Iowa trip, which I just spoke of. On Iowa Politics is a weekly news and analysis podcast that aims to recreate the kinds of conversations that happen when you get political reporters from across Iowa together after the day's headlines have been met. This week's show is hosted by the Gazette's Des Moines Bureau Chief Aaron Murphy and features Gazette Deputy Bureau Chief Tom Barton, Lee Des Moines Bureau Chief Caleb McCullough, Sarah Watson of the Quad City Times, Jared McNett of the Sioux City Journal, and Gazette Opinion Editor Todd Dorman. The show was produced by Stephen M. Colbert, and the music heard on the podcast is courtesy of Iowa bands Porch Builder and Copperhead. All right, it's time now for the obituaries, and we have four of them today, starting with one from Cherokee, Iowa, formerly Ouachita, Iowa, Franklin E. Huth, H-U-T-H. Franklin E. Huth, 82 years old of Cherokee and formerly of Ouachita, passed away peacefully on Thursday, September 22nd, at the Gardens Assisted Living of Cherokee. Services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Monday at the St. John Lutheran Church of Cushing with the pastor Jody Still Herbold and the pastor Barb Dinelli officiating. Burial will be at the Holstein Cemetery of Holstein with military rites conducted by the American Legion Mumford Moon Post number 79 and VFW Sioux Valley Post 1750 of Correctionville. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Sunday at the Nicholas D. Jensen Funeral Home of Holstein. The Nicholas D. Jensen Funeral Home of Holstein is in charge of the arrangements. Frank was born September 21st, 1940, at the family farm to Carl and Bertha Miller Huth. He was baptized and confirmed at St. John's Lutheran Church in rural Cushing, Iowa. He graduated from Ouachita Consolidated Schools in 1958 and was drafted into the U.S. Army in July 1963, serving with the 124th Medical Detachment in Swillbrücken, Germany. In 1965, Frank returned to the farm with his parents. On March 4, 1967, he was united in marriage to Beverly Livermore at St. John's Lutheran Church in Cushing, and they made their home on the family farm where they had two sons, Paul and Matt. Frank and Beverly kept very busy with the daily farm activities, with the livestock and crops. Frank served as a 4-H leader for the Douglas Dewars 4-H Club for 23 years, watching the youth excel with the projects and successful futures. He also served on the Ida County 4-H Committee for 4 years. Frank and Beverly farmed until the fall of 2009, when they retired due to Beverly's health. Frank was a dedicated caregiver until the passing of Beverly on September 10, 2011. Frank enjoyed having lunch at McDonald's in Cherokee, where he loved visiting with friends new and old. In later years, he enjoyed visiting with the various nurses and health professionals, finding their connection to people he knew in the area. In lieu of flowers, Frank requested memorials be made in his name to Cherokee Regional Hospice. The next one from Vermilion, South Dakota, Walter A. Block, B-L-O-C-K. Walter A. Block of Vermilion, South Dakota, born October 13, 1929, to Emil and Adelia Sehested, Block passed from this life on Wednesday, September 21st. Services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Monday at Concordia Lutheran Church, 7th South University Street, Vermilion, with Reverend Matthew Bless officiating. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the services. Burial with military rites will take place at the Lime Creek Cemetery in Maskell, Nebraska, after the service. Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home is handling arrangements. Online condolences may be made to MeyerBrosChapels.com. Walt grew up in Missouri Valley, Iowa, and attended country school through the 8th grade. He enlisted in the United States Army on October 9, 1951, attended basic training in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and was then on active duty in the Korean War as a surveyor. He was honorably discharged from active duty on June 25, 1953, and then later discharged from the Army Reserve on October 8, 1959. He met Muriel Milley in 1954, and they were married November 27, 1955. To this union were born Patty Pete Erickson of Hubbard, Nebraska, Connie Bob Wegner of Newcastle, Nebraska, and Mike Block of South Sioux City. He was a talented, self-taught man whose career took him from carpentry to installation of heating and air conditioning to law enforcement, fire and rescue, and town maintenance for the city of Newcastle. Walt was a 60-year member of the Newcastle Legion, Lawrence Lofgren Post 62, serving in multiple positions in the Legion. He was an active member of the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church, serving as elder in his earlier years. Honorary pallbearers are his grandchildren, and in lieu of flowers, memorials can be made to the family for designation to organizations in Walt's name. From Okoboji, Julia Julie Matlock Holtz. That's MatlockHoltze. Julia Julie Matlock Holtz, 94 years old, of Okoboji, passed away peacefully and went to join her loved ones on Wednesday, September 21st at her home in Okoboji. Services will be held at 2 p.m. today at the First Presbyterian Church in Spirit Lake, Iowa. Burial will take place in the Lakeview Garden Cemetery in Spirit Lake. Arrangements are under the direction of the Robinson Funeral Home, formerly known as the Schubert Lentz Funeral Home in Spirit Lake. Online condolences may be left at spiritlakefuneralhome.com. Julie was born on July 9, 1928, to William Bill and Ruth Blanks Matlock in San Angelo, Texas. She graduated from San Angelo High School in 1943 and attended Georgetown University in Georgetown, Texas, where she joined the Tri Delta sorority. She met John Samuel Holtz in San Angelo while he was stationed at Goodfellow Air Force Base. Julie and John, affectionately known as Andy, were married in San Angelo on July 16, 1949, and moved to Sioux City, where John went on to join his father as a partner in H.S. Holtz Construction Company. Sioux City is where they had and raised their three children. Julie felt blessed to be their mother, and she dedicated herself to raising them as a homemaker. Bill, Robin, and Andrea and their families were her greatest joy in life. Julie was raised in the Methodist Church. Julie and John were members of the Trinity Lutheran Church in Sioux City for 50 years. Growing up, Julie was quite the pianist. She was born with a strong guiding light, which had instilled in her while she was raised in West Texas. Julie truly had a zest for love and loved life, her family, and entertaining friends at her home. She was often called the consummate entertainer or hostess with the mostest. There was no one who could put on a dinner party with more panache than Julie Holtz, from her lovely and elegantly set tables to the food she served. She also loved to dance with John. Julie loved cooking and was a master chef, and even has her own cookbook that she treasured giving to her family and friends. She was a master of all types of food, from French to Mexican foods. If you couldn't find Julie in the kitchen, she could be found in her extensive gardens, where she would passionately care for her many varieties of flowers. She was also a golf and tennis enthusiast and often spoke proudly of her golf club championships at the Sioux City Country Club. She enjoyed gathering with her family and friends playing bridge and pitch. Julie and John had a love of travel and traveled extensively throughout the world with family and friends. Some of her fondest memories were traveling to the different French and Italian wine regions and to Mexico with friends. Julie always had a lifelong love of history and archaeological studies and never tired of learning of other cultures and histories. She especially loved U.S. history and was a strong, patriotic woman. Julie was president of the Sioux City Junior League, Sioux City Arts Center, a member of the State's Arts Council, and the Pearson Lakes Arts Center in Okoboji, a member of American Girls Book Club, a member of the Investment Club, multiple bridge clubs with her friends, including one with her very oldest friends at the San Angelo Country Club. She volunteered much of her life to many different causes. Julie and John had a love affair that spanned decades that has now been rekindled in heaven. She was loved by all who knew her, and she will be terribly missed. Donations may be given to the First Presbyterian Church in Spirit Lake. The final obituary for the day, from Sanborn, Iowa, Don Hakeman, H-A-K-E-M-A-N, Don Hakeman of Sanborn, Iowa, 93 years old, died Thursday, September 22nd. Services will be September 27th at 10:30 a.m. at St. John's Lutheran Church in Sanborn. Burial will be at Roseland Cemetery in Sanborn. Visitation will be September 26th from 2 to 7 p.m. at the Sanborn Funeral Home in Sanborn. Next is a story. It's not local, but it's kind of a hope out of a horrible thing. Boy shot in July 4th parade massacre returns home. This Dateline Chicago. 8-year-old Cooper Roberts is back home after more than 2 months of treatment for injuries from a shooting at a 4th of July parade in the Chicago suburb of Highland Park, his family said Thursday. The attack this past summer killed 7 and wounded dozens, including Cooper's mother, Keely Roberts, and his twin brother, Luke, who have since recovered. Cooper was shot in the back, and the bullet ripped through his body, severely damaging his aorta, liver, esophagus, and spinal cord before exiting through his chest. He was taken first to Highland Park Hospital, where he underwent a life-saving surgery, then spent inpatient stays at Comer Children's Hospital and Shirley Ryan Ability Lab in Chicago. Quote, "We are at a total loss of words to express how filled with gratitude, love, and wholeness we now feel, given that we are able to finally have Cooper back at home," end quote, the family said in a statement. Continuing the quote, "He is able to live once again with his twin brother Luke and resume being one another's very best playmates," end quote. Cooper, the youngest of 6 children who adores his French bulldog puppy George, is partially paralyzed and unable to play sports or on most playgrounds as he once loved to do. Quote, "For all the love that he has come back to, there are so many painful reminders of what he has lost," his parents said, adding that there is no word to describe Cooper's pain when he sees his bike he can no longer ride or his old soccer jersey. The family's home is no longer fully accessible for Cooper, who uses a wheelchair. The family is figuring out how they will renovate or build a new home. Quote, "This new normal we are just starting during this transition home is hard, really, really hard," end quote, his parents said. But they know, quote, "He will show the entire world that love really does win in the end," end quote. Shows a photo provided by the Roberts family of Cooper, who along with his twin brother and parents attended the July 4th parade, during which a shooter killed 7 and wounded dozens. Moving now to the sports pages, at the top of the front of the sports page, title is BCU Preaches Process. This is by Zach James and Dateline Sioux City. Even though the Briarcliff University football team kept the game last week against Morningside close, the message this week was still about process and execution. Sure, the Chargers were happy with the way they played in the first half of the 59-23 loss to the number 1 Mustangs, but Coach Shane LaDage said he had to temper some of the outside noise about them feeling good. "The goal was still to win the game, and we didn't go into that saying, I hope we just play with them," LaDage said. "We play to win. We're trying to temper a little bit of that, but I think there was some confidence of, hey, coach, isn't crazy. We could have won that game. We needed to play perfect football to win it, and when we started not doing that, it kind of unraveled." The Chargers are happy that they are feeling more confident as the season progresses, but LaDage still wants to make it a priority to preach process and execution. LaDage hopes the message and the vibe are being believed deeper week by week, and hopefully that message sifts in going to the 4th home game of the season. Briarcliff hosts Mount Marty at 1 p.m. Saturday for its homecoming at Memorial Field, and it's the 5th game this season that the Chargers will play in Sioux City. There were mistakes that the Chargers made in the loss to the Mustangs, and they knew that even the little mistakes could cost them, or would cost them. BCU trailed by 8 points with 9 minutes 21 seconds left after a 40-yard field goal from Jonathan Branner, but the Mustangs scored 28 straight points in the final 24-plus minutes to run away with the Saddle Trophy for the 20th straight time. 2 of those touchdowns came on interception returns thrown by quarterback Luke Davies. Davies completed 24 passes for 363 yards. The Chargers have had to throw the ball more than run it because the run game simply hasn't gotten going throughout 4 games. "We're doing some good things, but there's obviously a lot to work on," LaDash said. "Luke and the receivers are their own worst critics. That part, as a coach, it's pretty fun to coach those guys because they do a good job of holding them accountable." The Chargers and the Lancers are similar teams this season, Both teams have a win, as Martin Mountie earned its first win as a program to open the season against Presentation, while the Chargers held off Jamestown in a thriller 2 weeks ago. BCU's points per game is at 22.7 points per game, while the Lancers have tallied 23 points on average in their three games. The Lancers have run the ball much more successfully than their opponent. MMU enters Saturday's game with an average of 156.3 yards per game on the ground. Isaiah Thompson leads the Lancers at 5.2 yards per carry. LaDosh hopes that senior lineman MJ Montgomery can have the same output that he had last year. In last year's win over the Lancers, Montgomery had 14 tackles, 3.5 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, and 1 forced fumble. MJ has to be MJ, LaDosh said. We need another output like that from him. We have to be really opportunistic in their pass game and force them into some poor decisions, and we need to take advantage of them. In an inset picture on the front page of the sports section, it shows Briarcliff sophomore wide receiver Imond Pittman trying to evade the Jamestown defense earlier this season at Memorial Field. Next story is some prep volleyball continuing to grow. SBL volleyball growing with a young core. This is by Bailey Zubke and Dateline Sergeant Bluff. After 5 straight state tournament appearances for the Sergeant Bluff Luton High School volleyball program, a new challenge has presented itself. A youthful Warriors team was swept by Western Christian 25-16, 25-16, 25-14 Thursday night in Sergeant Bluff. Every time we play Western Christian, everyone rises to the occasion, Warriors head coach Renee Winkle said. They're a great program, great team. For us, we're young this year, and we're still working through a few things, and in that sense, I feel like our girls competed well and hung well with them. The Warriors fell to 4-11 on the season with the loss, but with a large group of the varsity roster having never played varsity before this season, there is a lot of learning to do for this group. I have a lot of players who played JV last year, so this is a lot faster pace, Winkle said. Until you see it, you just don't know, so it's just trying to work up to that pace or up to that level. Thursday night, it was the strength and speed of the Wolfpack's attack that gave the Warriors struggles. The new pieces for the Warriors are starting to adjust to the level of play it takes to compete, but they are a step behind where Sergeant Bluff Luton has been over the last couple of years. When you're looking at replacing the senior class that we lost last year, you know, I've got a new quarterback, center on the floor, Winkle said. I've just got a lot of new, so it's every single person out there doing one thing better every single time, and that's what it's going to take to get the team to grow, to stay positive. Senior Alexa Trover leads the team in kills this season and has led the group with 7 kills Thursday night. Junior Camilla Van Kalsbeek added 5 kills. Sophomore Aussie Obank is the team's center this season and recorded 15 assists against Western Christian. Senior Ellen Pruitt dug up 7 balls, as did junior Taylor Prosser. Sophomore Jaden Kneifel had 2 aces on the night. When you look back from where we started to where we're at now, we've grown. We've gotten better. We're improving, Winkle said. That growth will need to be sustained as the Warriors hit the home stretch of the 2022 season. The Warriors aren't concerned with district play at the moment, but rather want to focus on the here and now as the team looks to find its groove. We're focused on right now. It's can we get better every single day, Winkle said. If we get better, then that's our positive. And the girls have done a great job of staying positive in that sense. And they've done a great job of just doing one thing better every single day. And over the course of the season, that'll add up for us. Playing matches against teams like Western Christian presents a chance to continue to improve for the Warriors who play in a tournament at Unity Christian Saturday. Winkle hopes the team can learn from Thursday and continue to get better. There's a lot of kids out there who've never played Western Christian at the varsity level, Winkle said. So seeing some of the attacks and the things that they did, it's things that can challenge us and just push us to be a little bit better in that sense, now that they've seen it. In an inset picture, it shows on the front page of the sports section, it shows Sergeant Bluff Luton's Camilla Van Kalsbeek hitting a kill shot during Western Christian versus Sergeant Bluff Luton volleyball action on Thursday in Sergeant Bluff. One more on the sports section. Wrestlers take the spotlight. Tonight is the Prep Wrestling Night of Conflict. And it says, De Leon among Metro grapplers. This by Zach James and Dateline Sioux City. While it may be fall, the Long Lines Family Rec Center will be a hot spot for wrestling fans on Saturday. Iowa Wrestler, or IA Wrestle, is bringing back Night of Conflict on Saturday night downtown with action starting at 6 p.m. The card entails several matches between some of the top-ranked male and female wrestlers in Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska. On the boys' card, there are two matches that will have head-to-head matches between number one wrestlers. One of them includes a Metro wrestler. Bishop Heelan Sr. Ethan De Leon will be facing Wyatt Reese of Logan Magnolia. De Leon had a wrist injury around this time last season and wasn't able to start off his junior season the way he wanted to. De Leon did make it to the Class 2A 170-pound title match, but lost to Atlantic's Caden Stutzman in the title match. IA Wrestle founder Tony Hager said that the match between De Leon and Reese will be one to circle on the boys' card. I think Ethan is an unknown on the eastern side of the state, De Leon said. While he's known up here, it'll be a great opportunity for him to compete on a big stage. This is why we have these types of events. It gets some eyeballs on him from college coaches, and this is a perfect type of example for extra publicity. De Leon isn't the only Metro Boys wrestler competing on the Arena Sports Academy-sponsored mat downtown on Saturday. Ty Kodum, who has a number one ranking by IA Wrestle, will grapple against number two, Jace Anderson of Ankeny. Kodum won in the final seconds of his match in last year's Night of Conflict, and he put on a show. Hager expects the same out of the Warriors senior. He understands how important this is to the community, Hager said. He embraces that. Bo Kodum, who is seeded third, will face number three, seeded Blake Allen of Underwood. The Warriors will be hosting a fundraiser at 3 p.m. in the parking lot. On the girls' card, there are five matches that will involve local wrestlers. Two of them have number one seeds. One of them is South Sioux City's Yohali Quinones. Quinones won by default back in the 152-pound championship match back last winter because of an injury over Michaela Pate over McCook. With McCook. Quinones will be wrestling Skylar Slade of Southeast Polk. Then Spencer's Olivia Huckfelt could wrestle or will wrestle against Creston's Savannah Sistad. Huckfelt won the 285-pound title on January 22nd as she pinned Humboldt sophomore Riley Cole in 2 minutes 35 seconds. Huckfelt trailed 2-1 when she pinned Coyle. The other three ladies wrestlers are Ridgeview's Tatum Shepherd, SBL's Kendra Berglund, and Spencer's Kaylee Natchigal. Natchigal was a late addition to the card. I'm overjoyed with the girls' card we have, Hager said. Easily the best card that we've had. This is a good opportunity for the local girls to show others that this is a big deal and that you can have part of the spotlight. Chosen an inset picture, Spencer's Olivia Huckfelt competing against Iowa Valley's Millie Peach during the IWCOA Girls State Wrestling Tournament. This back on January 23rd, 2021 at Extreme Arena in Coralville. It's time now for Dear Abby. The first letter for today is from, actually it's the only letter of the day, is from Upset Newlywed in Texas, and it's titled Navigating Old and Enduring Relationships in a New Marriage. Dear Abby, I recently married Joel, a man I love very much. While we have our differences, we are solid in the knowledge that we love each other and are in this marriage for the long haul. Our wedding pictures just arrived, and after going through them together, I asked my husband to create a digital album to share with our family and friends, as I'm very busy with work. I just had a moment to look through the album he created and saw he had omitted a picture of my male best friend, Logan, and me hugging as Joel and I left the reception. It was a very special moment for me because I grew up with Logan and consider his family an extension of mine. When I explained this to my husband, he expressed that he understands. I feel very hurt that this picture was omitted. Joel has expressed in the past that he isn't comfortable with me hugging males who are not family members. It has been a point of contention between us, and after a couple of long talks on the subject, I thought we had reached a resolution. Before the wedding, I found out Joel still had pictures of ex-girlfriends on his phone. When I confronted him about it, he said he kept them for memories but would delete them, which he did. Now that we're married, I have noticed he brings up his past dating life a lot. I have asked him to stop, but he keeps doing it. I feel like this is a double standard. I must distance myself from male friends, but Joel gets to keep his connections with ex-girlfriends. I don't know how to broach this with him because it is so early in our marriage. I could use some advice. Signed, Upset Newlywed in Texas. Dear Newlywed, you and your husband are overdue for a serious discussion. There's a difference between mentioning one's past dating life and maintaining connections to those individuals. If Joel is staying in touch with them, he is employing a double standard and you need to talk it over. You may have to keep reminding him that talking about his past romances makes you uncomfortable and ask why he persists in spite of knowing it does. The photo of you and Logan hugging at the end of the reception may have been omitted because it wasn't a memory of your wedding day that your husband felt was relevant. Now that you have explained its significance, ask Joel to add it if that's possible, but do it when you are both calm and relaxed so it isn't contentious and you both can clear the air. All right, taking a last look at the weather. Partly sunny and breezy and warmer today. 79 shall be the high. Winds out of the west-northwest at 10 to 20 miles an hour. Turning clear tonight. Low dropping down to 51 degrees and winds at northwest at 7 to 14 miles per hour. Cooling off a bit on Sunday, mostly sunny, breezy, but quite pleasant still. High of 74 degrees, winds northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. On Sunday night, clear skies, low of 41 degrees, partly sunny and pleasant on Monday. A high again, 74, winds slightly less at 8 to 16 miles an hour. Monday night, clear skies, low of 41, and then mostly sunny and pleasant on Tuesday. A high of 71 degrees, winds north at 6 to 12 miles per hour. Tuesday night, clear skies, low of 41, and plenty of sun on Wednesday. Pleasant, a high of 72 degrees with winds south-southeast at 8 to 16 miles an hour. And that does it for the reading of the Sioux City Journal for today, Saturday, September 24, 2022, the last hour. The stories have been selected and read by yours truly, John Reef. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print handicapped. If you have any questions, you can call IRIS toll-free at 877-404-4747. We thank you for listening to IRIS, your radio reading service.